Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, and always respectfully. Especially today, I'm going to be talking about respect because my topic today is going to be communicating with others about climate change. One of the climate scientists I admire most deeply is Catherine Hayhoe. She's a climate scientist down at Texas Tech University. She's also a political science teacher there, and she's chair of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech, so eminently qualified. And one of the things that Catherine says when asked, "What can I do?" she replies, "Talk to others about climate change." And really, I gotta say, she's right on target there. Think about other situations around the world that have occurred in the past. There's been lead-ups that have had lots of signs along the way that things were not going to turn out well. Yet most people have sat silently watching the unfolding disaster. So I'm thinking of things like the Rwanda genocide or the genocide of the Rohingya in Myanmar. Our history is littered with those kinds of things, and it's also littered with a lot of folks who just sat by silently, not saying anything, as the situation unfolded, as the tragedy unfolded. That doesn't mean it's easy to speak out. I get that it's tough to speak out, especially some of us are a little reluctant to put our points of view out there in the first place, which makes it doubly difficult. And the problem is a tough one. Dan Ariely, another one of my favorites, he's a behavioral economist, and he says that if we were to design a problem that was particularly difficult for human beings to address, it would be climate change. So we've got the necessity to speak out, the importance of speaking out, and the difficulty of the same thing, given who we are as human beings. You may recall that a number of years ago, there was an incident in New York City where somebody was being attacked on the street, a mugging or some such thing. And there were lots of people who could see what was going on looking from their apartment windows and so on, yet nobody did anything. At first, the interpretation was, well, those New Yorkers just don't care about each other. All they do is care about themselves and they're hard-hearted. But some blessed person decided to dig in deeper and ended up interviewing 60 or 70 folks who had observed the crime taking place and found out that universally every individual thought that somebody else was going to call the police or intervene in some way. So it wasn't cold-heartedness. You might even say it was shyness. There's a term that's come into being that describes this exact situation. It's called the bystander effect. It's the belief that somebody else is going to step up and do what needs to be done. And contributing to that may be our kind of natural belief that there are others that are more qualified to do things than we are. So it's easy to think, well, there are more eloquent people than I, smarter people, people with more facts at their disposal, people with more training who are better qualified than I am to speak on climate change. Don't fall for that one. You have friends, relatives, you belong to groups, you have opportunities to speak, and I'm urging you to take advantage of those opportunities to speak. I'm also going to talk a bit here about some what I'll call do's and don'ts, some considerations to make sure that our speaking out has the desired effect. There's another human quality that's sometimes referred to as the backfire effect, and that means that if we approach a conversation, a difficult conversation with somebody, and we don't handle it thoughtfully and skillfully, that the result can be that the person we're trying to persuade of a certain perspective becomes even more defensive of their own perspective. So some pitfalls along the way. Before digging in a little bit, I do want to talk a bit about human biases. We are all subject to these biases, and they affect how we act, how we think about things, how we behave. And that's just part of being a human being. There's just no way about it. None of us is Dr. Spock, who operates just strictly from logic, or at least that's the mythology. One of the most powerful of these is confirmation bias. Did you ever wonder how somebody could have a point of view distinctly different than your own about politics or philosophy or religion or what kind of house to live in, you name it. We develop our own points of view and we seek out evidence to support those points of view, and we disregard evidence that tends to rebut our point of view. That's called confirmation bias, and we're all subject to it. So let's just do a little personal experiment here, a little mind experiment. How often do you watch a news channel that's different from the one you normally watch? One that perhaps has a different political spin than what you believe yourself? If you answer not very often, then you're not alone. And that's confirmation bias right there. We're looking to confirm the stuff that we already believe. Another thing that's going on these days, and Stephen Colbert is the one who came up with this term. His term is truthiness. And truthiness, simply put, is, and is showing up all over our society, or all over our culture, is a growing hostility toward factual reporting and fact-based discussion. Really strange, you know, that sort of objective truth has gone out of fashion. I remember not too long ago seeing somebody interviewed on the news about a climate change issue, and that person just flat out saying, "I don't trust the scientists, period." That person had a set of beliefs and took those beliefs as truth, and that's truthiness. So when you talk with others who, let's say, are skeptical or denying the reality of climate change, we're going to run into truthiness. The value of knowing ahead of time is that we're armed, we can see what's going on, we can understand what's going on in that person's worldview. Another thing we'll bump into is called normalcy bias. That means that people tend to believe that things are just going to stay about the same and they're not going to get ready for a disaster or other kind of bad happening if it hasn't happened to them before. I'm thinking of that guy down on Mount St. Helens a long time ago. Can't think of his name right now, but he'd lived on that mountain for a long time. It had never blown up. And when the government agencies tried to get him to leave the area because of the pending eruption, he refused. And of course, he's down there underneath all that ash somewhere now. That's normalcy bias. And as human beings, we like things to pretty much stay the way they are. We have our little routines, our habits, our practices, and we don't want anybody upsetting the apple cart. So part of what's going on with climate change is that it's a catastrophe that we haven't experienced before. What we've done in the past is not going to work in the future. We tend to surround ourselves with ideas and perspectives that confirm what we already believe. And sadly, fact, data, science is out of favor these days. So that's the framework from which I'm going to be making my comments today. So I think the audience is really an important consideration here. So there are a number of situations where we may be called upon to speak out, or we might think, well, I should speak out. And that can be a spectrum anywhere from just one-on-one with a friend, maybe a small intimate gathering like a small family gathering, a group of folks that you have a hobby with, you go bowling with, you play bridge with them or something like that. Very personal relationships. So I'm going to call that one-on-one or a small group. Another possibility is a large group. And perhaps if you do presentations or you're a spokesperson for an organization that you belong to, this would apply there. These days, it applies, I think, to almost everyone because almost everyone uses social media, especially Facebook, and many of us have many friends counting up into the hundreds. So when we're speaking out in social media, we may be talking to a lot of people. Two different situations, and two situations that I think need to be handled very differently. So to speak of one-on-one or a small group, our cultural model of people who are in disagreement is argument or debate. And both of those are win-lose propositions. And part of the belief there is if we just simply get the facts out, we are going to convince the other person of the correctness of our point of view. in that argument or debate. I'm going to work on making the case as we go along here that facts and the debate argument approach just aren't going to get you to where you want to be. I remember some time ago, I saw a sticker on somebody's coffee cup that said, "Just because you've silenced me doesn't mean you've convinced me." And really, that's right on. So we may win an argument or a debate. We may crush the other person with our facts and our logic, and that other person may go into silence. But that doesn't mean you've changed that person's mind or persuaded them to a different perspective. And there's every likelihood that that person's dug into their position even more firmly than they had before as a result of that conversation. So what to do? First off, I would suggest thinking in this kind of intimate conversation, making persuasion a long-term project. You're not going to change anybody's mind with a quick set of arguments or facts. And the relationship needs to be preserved if you're going to have some kind of impact over time. Stephen Covey has said many times, seek first to understand. And I think that's such a key point. So in an initial conversation, I think that if you can just get to the point where the other person sees that you understand their point, that you're starting to set the foundation for further conversations and the possibility of a persuasion. Now, that quote from Stephen Covey is, seek first to understand. And there's the insinuation that after the understanding that I bring to the table, there will be some understanding from the other person. Well, maybe, maybe not. I'd say a really thoughtful, emotionally mature person is probably going to be willing to say, okay, I see you understand my point of view. Now let me see if I understand yours. Might or might not happen. Doesn't matter. It's still important to understand the other person as a basis for going forward. And who knows, you might learn something that you didn't know before just by being willing to listen and understand. A part of this approach, I think, is asking questions. Questions like, oh, interesting, well, tell me more about your perspective. Perhaps find out what the emotional basis for a point of view is and approach that point of view from that perspective. Let's say you ask a person what their concerns are, and you get the response, well, if the environmentalists get their way, I'll lose my job. So a proper response then would be something like a supporting statement, like, I can see how terrible that would be to lose your job. This is as opposed to, don't be silly, you're not going to lose your job. There's lots of good jobs out there. I think you can intuitively see why one response has some hope of working and the other response really doesn't. So if you can build some trust in a relationship and show that you're not taking on the conversation in an effort to defeat the other person's point of view, then I think you have the basis over time to actually persuade to make a difference in that person's life. And you know, one of the very best persuaders that I've personally experienced is my own personal behavior. I see regularly by me taking on certain behaviors related to the environment and to climate, that has changed the behavior of folks around me. And as we become more aware of climate change and the environment, then we become more open to understanding and learning more and learning it on our own. Which also reminds me of Socrates' great comment that people are most convinced by that which they understand for themselves. So in a lot of respects, our one-on-one conversations are framed in a way that allows the other person to discover things for themselves. So the second scenario that I'm talking about today is speaking up in front of large groups and in particular social media. And in this case, I absolutely believe that facts do make a difference. One of my favorite quotes is from Oprah Winfrey. At least I believe it's from Oprah. I've never been able to nail it down, but it goes something like this. Nothing can make for a good argument like two people who don't know what they're talking about. I imagine you've probably seen that play out in your own experience observing others, and who knows, perhaps you've even been involved in one of those discussions and realized that neither one of you knew enough about the topic to really be talking about it in the way you were, but egos have kicked in and positions have dug in and so on. So facts matter. So how do we find facts? Well, we find facts doing our homework. But you know, there's a really shortcut way of doing this, especially if you're responding to somebody on Facebook. And I'm going to talk just a little bit more about that in a second here. But let's take an organization like Snopes.com. Snopes has done the research on just about every claim that is not well-founded in science. They've done research, they give you the perspectives, they give you the sources for that research. And here to me, the value of that is, if I put out on a Facebook posting, Snopes says so on and so forth, there's a lot of folks out there say, oh, well, Snopes is biased. So what I look for are the sources that Snopes points to. And I find what most people would consider unbiased or middle-of-the-road kind of sources. I'm talking about things like National Geographic or Scientific American or a newspaper like USA Today. Once I have those sources, those are what I quote when I'm talking on Facebook or to an in-person group. Okay, somebody posts something on Facebook that's clearly destructive to clear understandings of what's going on with the climate. What am I going to do? Well, let me start off with what I'm not going to do. I am not going to engage with that person that put that there. An argument with that person is going to be fruitless. We'll be putting that person's myth or misconception out for other people to pay more attention to. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to those who may be listening. You know, there are lots of folks on Facebook and other social media. They're listening in, they're watching, they're curious, and those are really the ones that I'm talking to if I respond to somebody on Facebook. So let's just try a simple example that might show up on Facebook. Somebody posts on Facebook, well, the reason there are so many fires in the West right now is because of forest mismanagement. It's got nothing to do with climate. First off, repeating a misinformation kind of statement simply reinforces that. So I don't start off by saying, oh, yeah, well, no, management is not the problem alone, and climate change has got a big impact. I've just repeated that person's misinformation for them. So keep in mind that I am talking to the lurkers, the listeners. I'll simply state that climate change is a threat multiplier for the wildfires, that there are many reasons we have wildfires, things like down power lines, poor forest management, human beings doing silly things, even arson here and there, and climate change is making all of those things worse, and it will continue to make them worse. And I can find some source for that supporting my point of view if I want to in an organization like National Geographic or Sierra Club. So not trying to rebut the misinformation with the person putting it out, but just speaking to the concept. So there are some ideas about talking to two different kinds of audience about misinformation and climate change. I imagine you've probably heard talk in terms of security in public places like airports, where the expression is, if you see something, say something. Once again, the idea there is that people need to speak up when they see something that's not right, not rely on somebody else to do it. And I think the same thing is exactly true about climate change. And let's keep in mind also that the only thing that's needed for political predators to hold sway is for good people to remain silent. Our just caring or doing our own homework and keeping it to ourselves is not enough. We have to take action, and that action almost always involves speaking out. And one of the very best ways of speaking out, a way of leveraging our own voice, is to be part of organizations who are speaking out for the environment. I'm talking about organizations like 350 or Sierra Club or Audubon or Citizens for a Healthy Bay or my own organization, Citizens Climate Lobby or Citizens Climate Education. By joining in with those groups, we become more adept at speaking out, we become more founded in reality, and we can join our voices with the support of other like-minded people. There's another way of speaking out too, with an election coming up so critical that we elect leaders who are willing to take on the challenge of climate change and other environmentally related issues. So I'm going to mention a couple organizations to you. One's called Vote Forward. It's an organization that's seeking out people who typically might not vote, especially in swing states. And it's a chance for you to communicate within this organization personally with people to encourage them to vote. Another organization which I think very highly of is called the Environmental Voter Project. Did you know that there's something like 16 million people in the United States who would put the environment as their number one concern that don't vote historically? So the Environmental Voter Project is an effort to get those folks to the polls once again through an organization that's pretty well structured and will give you the tools you need to speak out in that regard. So that's it for today. Short version, if you see something, say something. I have links to a number of the topics referred to in the program today. You can find those links at ccltacoma.org. And I'd also love to hear from you, john@ccltacoma.org. So in the meantime, as always, I'm calling for you to live like the mountain is out. Take care now.